afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Grenville Strategic Royalty Corporation's third quarter 2014 results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. If anyone has difficulty hearing the conference, you may press star zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that today's discussions may contain forward-looking statements that reflect current views with respect to future events. Any such statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those projected in the forward-looking statements. For more information on Grenville's risks and uncertainties related to these forward-looking statements, please refer to the company's Management Information Circular dated January 14, 2014, which is available on SEDAR. I would now like to turn the meeting over to William Tharp, Chief Executive Officer of Grenville Strategic Royalty Corporation. Please go ahead, Mr. Tharp.
That's great. Thanks for the introduction, Mike. Good afternoon to everyone, and thank you for participating in today's call. I'm joined today by Steve Perry, our Executive Chairman, Donica Rahill, Grenville's Chief Executive Officer. I'll provide remarks on the quarter announced earlier today. Donica will then provide a financial review, followed by a Q&A session. It was a strong quarter, as our financials reflect, and we continue to carry the momentum forward well into the fourth quarter. During the third quarter, we recorded revenues of just under $1 million at $900,000, and we recorded adjusted EBITDA of $500,000. The improved financial performance is a result of our core capabilities to capitalize on accretive opportunities to further grow and strengthen our business. In the quarter, we acquired $9.5 million in royalties. We have a very robust pipeline of opportunities and are actively reviewing, on average, about 30 deals per month. As we indicated at the time of our RTO, we've set a plan in place to achieve our growth targets with a diversified portfolio in mind. Our royalty model and unique financing capabilities genuinely provide entrepreneurs with the power of choice. Grenville focuses on small to medium public and private enterprises requiring financing, with the exception of mining, oil and gas, film, and pharmaceutical sectors. Our returns are aligned with our partners' objectives as we provide financing solutions that are non-dilutive and require no management control, board seats, or shareholders' agreements. As a company, we pride ourselves on the high level of efficiency and effectiveness, with closing periods averaging 30 days once the term sheet is signed. And that compares to 3 to 6 months required by venture capitalists. We remain disciplined, growing a balanced and diversified portfolio of quality investments. Currently, our portfolio is comprised of 22 investments across 18 companies, with 53% situated in Canada and 47% situated in the United States. We intentionally diversify our investments into sectors of the economies, defensive, neutral, cyclicals, as they provide us with the capability to broaden our investment base while mitigating market risks at the same time. The risk profile of our investments is also diversified to provide us with a sustainable revenue stream, with the upside of capitalizing on high growth opportunities for royalty expansion. Given the success of our scalable business model, we have already reached our stage one growth target of 10 discrete and diversified companies. We're now very close to achieving our stage two target of 20 companies in the near term, having today announced our 18th investment, and well on our way to our next milestone, which is 50 high-quality companies integrated into our portfolio. It is with our experienced team of professionals that we are able to form new, accretive partnerships. The latest additions include Innovex Solutions, Above Security, 1UP Games, DS Handling, and Lattice Biologics. We believe that royalty financing is better aligned with our investees than traditional equity or debt, as they grow their business with the added benefit that we do not compete for return with their existing equity investors. Subsequent to the close of the quarter, we've entered into 3 additional partnerships with BG Furnitures, Abacus Solutions, and Medical Imaging, which was closed Friday and announced this morning, which are the result of our ability to identify opportunities for royalty expansion and strong underwriting capabilities. As we grow our portfolio, we continue to see tangible improvements in the quality and size of our deal flow. Our results are well on track with our strategic plan, and we remain focused to a assess and identify opportunities to grow our royalty portfolio while maintaining minimal operating costs. Since inception last year, the RTO earlier this year, and through till today, we've acquired $24 million in royalty agreements and continue to build on our success. With a stable foundation now in place, we look forward to positive revenue generation moving forward. I'll now have Donica Rawhill, Grenville's Chief Financial Officer, provide an overview of our financial results for the quarter. Donica.
Thank you, Bill. In the third quarter, we achieved solid financial results with revenue of $900,000, benefit from royalty payment income from our portfolio, operating expenses of $32,000, which is low because of a $361,000 unrealized foreign exchange gain on our U.S. royalty agreements. On a net basis, operating expenses were approximately $375,000 and adjusted EBITDA of $0.5 million. In order to manage the business effectively, we monitor a number of metrics which we believe reflect our performance. These metrics are used to monitor trends in size, volume, and velocity in the investments and to gain insight into the performance of the portfolio. In the quarter, we reported the rolling three-month average investment per month of $3.8 million and a three-month average investment per transaction of $1.7 million. Our highly scalable royalty model is a crucial element for the positive contributions made during the quarter. The average royalty payment per million invested was $243,000 in the month end of September. Our profit generation is predicated on a royalty contract that typically includes a minimum of $250,000 in annual royalties per $1 million invested. The shortfall of $7,000 is modest, and we would expect this level of volatility in a typical SME portfolio. As our income is based on the effective interest rate method, $64,000 of the royalty earned in the quarter was accounted for as principal. As of today, all of our investments are on track with a zero default rate. We are of the strengthening view that our portfolio is a continual balance between the failure rate and the company revenue growth. As of September 30th, the company's capital resources were $19.6 million, working capital of $14.6 million, and a cash position of $13.4 million. In July, Grenville completed a $17.2 million bought deal, offering for 8% convertible debentures maturing on December 31st, 2019. The net proceeds of the offering were partially deployed to acquire royalty agreements, and the remaining balance of $12 million will be utilized to further Grenville's growth plans with future royalty agreements.
Thanks, Donica. With a solid foundation now in place, the Board of Directors has also established a dividend policy to ensure capital is returned to shareholders. This consideration is a meaningful step for the company. We hope to create a secure, sustainable, and growing dividend while retaining the financial flexibility to continue to make investments into our business with a targeted payout ratio for 2015 of 80%. The board will review Grenville's cash flow, earnings, working capital requirements, financial position, and other relevant factors prior to making the decision on timing and magnitude of any dividend. With that, I'd like to reiterate our success in the third quarter, strong financial results with strong positive free cash flow, capitalizing on our scalable royalty model, very robust pipeline with accretive opportunities, continuing to build a diverse, balanced portfolio with quality investments, well on our way to achieving our growth targets, and very well positioned to build future growth. At Grenville, it's our practice to provide a disciplined approach for profitability while managing our business with minimal operating costs. Our shift to positive free cash flow, complemented with the numerous royalty expansion opportunities, allows us to carry our growth momentum well through into 2015. At this time, we would like to take your questions. Operator, provide instructions, and we'll open the line for questions. Thank you.
At this time, I would like to inform everyone, in order to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We will pause for a few moments to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question is from Trevor Johnson with National Bank.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen.
Hi, Trevor.
Just curious, you mentioned obviously zero defaults to date. Is there any businesses that have any hiccups that you can speak to? And then conversely, can you just talk about what you're seeing from a top-line organic growth standpoint from your various partners? Again, I know you can't comment on year-over-year comps per se, but just directionally, what way we're going?
Yeah, we've seen solid growth in the underlying revenues within the portfolio itself, Trevor. We're probably averaging just under 25% revenue growth, but you'll also recognize that that is moderated. Our direct access to that growth is moderated by virtue of the fact that we've got minimum royalty payments in place. So those minimum royalty payments, you know, we've kind of horse traded a bit between their growth and having a minimum dollar amount set at that $250,000 mark. The other thing that moderates the that kind of impact of that growth coming through directly in our numbers is the fact that we have a sliding scale mechanism that we use on many of the pricing structures. But over a period of time, we'll start to see, as we get past the impact of the minimums and the and those sliding scale structures, we'll start to see effectively what we think is a compounding effect in the growth of the royalty revenues in the portfolio. So that's where we would hope the number of $250,000 of revenue per $1 million invested actually starts to move up as those numbers are reflected accordingly in the portfolio companies. And to your question, are we seeing any challenges within the portfolio? Right now, we have no arrears, and we have nothing in a default position. Now, candidly, we've got a lot of SME companies. Some of them are hitting revenue marks. Some of them are above the revenue marks. But by and large, I think Steve and I are very pleased with the portfolio. The team is very pleased with the portfolio.
Perfect. Yeah, just mentioning the team, you guys are extremely active. I think you have roughly 7-8 people at head office now. Can you just talk about where you see that go as you continue to deploy, you know, upwards of $4 million a month, if not even more?
Yeah, so right now, Trevor, we're at a total of 8 people, including a couple of interns from some of the great co-op programs here in Canada. We probably need to expand as we move out. As you know, it's a highly scalable model, but we probably need to add one deal partner and then support under Donica on the kind of portfolio maintenance side of the equation. Over a period of time, I would see increasing from kind of 8 people where we are today up to kind of 10, 12, 13, but I don't see it exceeding those numbers over a period of time.
Okay. And just last one, I get the impression that sourcing deals isn't really a challenge at all, given how much is on your plate. Can you just talk about current environment, deal pipeline, and ability to deploy capital in today's environment?
Yeah, Trevor, we're I think the hiccups in the capital markets or whatever, I think the deal flows in for us are getting stronger. Greater than 50% of all deals received or reviewed are actually coming in through our deal, kind of a finder's network. And those are guys who have helped us close deals before. And so their nose in terms of hunting for deals is getting better. They know that there are certain deals we simply won't look at. So we're training a whole kind of line of warriors out there to bring us better and better quality deals. But it's about greater than 50%, which would come in from the deal flow network. We're seeing on average about 30 deals a month. We have outstanding at any point in time, usually about 12 term sheets. Right now, we have 5 term sheets signed and in place.
That's great, Keller. Thanks, guys.
That's great. Thanks, Trevor. Really appreciate the question.
Next question is from Neil Gilmer with Claris Securities.
Yeah, thanks very much. Actually, maybe my first question might be just a follow-up on one of Trevor's questions there. With respect to the potential for additional staff, do you have sort of a point at which you think that's coming into place as far as how that might, flow into the SG&A line? Would that sort of be early 2015 sort of your timing to bring on another deal person?
I think that's a reasonable estimate, Neil. 2015. I think we'll keep to a very tight budget for 2014, where we are right now. For 2015, if we add one or two or three more people on board, I think it's well within, all of the analyst numbers for our SG&A. In fact, I think we'll be able to keep a very tight budget in place. But I would see one deal partner and then one or two support staff coming on board.
Thank you. And then, with respect to your comment in your prepared remarks and in the press release on the dividend, so just to be clear, so you guys have established basically with the board that they're going to review it. There's no timing with which you are going that you've put out right now, but when it's appropriate, you'll be just press releasing what the dividend is and when it will commence. Is that
correct? That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. There's been a lot of thinking and working on the model, Neil, to find the right balance for that dividend. And we have quite a conservative board, and rightly so. So I think as we get to that point, and it's an important part of our business strategy, and we'd articulated that very clearly from day one.
No, absolutely. And then maybe just, the average royalty payment per million invested, I know you use that to try to measure it, but it obviously has some volatility to it. You can see that in the MD&A with respect to, July it was above your metric and that in part and parcel is probably because, you actually deployed a little bit less capital in July than some of the other months. So, I guess to your comments in your prepared remarks there, I think it would be safe to say that we should still expect some volatility of that metric over the course of the next few months, and then probably in 2015 is when we see that stabilize above the 250 month level?
Yeah, I think you'll see some moderating with it over a period of time. If I think of the metrics for July, there was one deal that we closed later in the month that had a higher royalty payment attached to it. So it actually shifted the number up. But as a percentage of the overall portfolio, I think those types of kind of mid-market aberrations, Neil, will start to become less the norm and more kind of an exception to the rule.
Yeah.
Monica?
Yeah, and I would just add to that. I mean, as the portfolio becomes more diversified and the timing of the investments will ensure that particular metric will become more consistent.
Great. Thanks very much. I'll pass the line.
Thanks, Neil. Appreciate the questions.
Next question is from Jeff Fenwick with Cormark Securities.
Hey, gentlemen. Good afternoon. Just wanted to follow up on some of the questions being asked here. I guess, Bill, one thing is as you're iterating through these deals, can you speak to just the nature of what you're seeing now in terms of deal structure? Is it becoming more consistent with you because you have more options in terms of deal flow?
Yeah, Jeff. Good to hear your voice. Yes, it is becoming more consistent. The variations on the theme, I think, a year ago when it was a year, year and a half ago when everything seemed like it was new, most of the rabbit holes structurally, I think we've gone down most of those at this stage. And there are certain attributes that we like more than others. And we also like the idea, Jeff, as you know, to try to continually keep it simple. You can make a deal awfully complex, awfully easily. So part of the art is actually carving it back so it's as simple as possible. So when people ask for, can you do the following, you can do just about everything, but you may rue the day that you actually put that into a legal document. So I'd say the one thing we're striving to do, and we're starting to see, I think the team is just becoming naturally trained in that way, is to keep the deals simple so they're understandable.
Okay, and then maybe just one follow-on there with some of these deals you're doing now. I know some of them are really for growth CapEx or investing in the expansion of these franchises. And just wondering, when you're looking at pricing the deal as a percent of revenue, are you basing it off of the business plan the company's giving you in terms of the step-up they're going to get from that investment? Is that how you're looking at it, or is more about the existing state of the business today? I just noticed with Med in particular, because it looks like the deals they're going to do are pretty significant in terms of scaling the size of that business.
Yeah, so what I like, we're seeing an interesting phenomenon out there where our capital is definitely very helpful when it comes to acquisitions, partly because at the point of an acquisition, there's a need for the acquiring company to have more capital. The typical funders there have actually squeezed the acquiring company much more aggressively if they need equity, and we're not pressing on that pre-money value button, which we think is quite advantageous. But we're not willing to usually give up much of the upside for the acquisition unless that results in some gaming around the minimum itself or some type of a sliding scale structure. So each one of them is uniquely structured because each one of them has different growth dynamics. But and again, one thing that we will give up some upside for is the assurance of the minimum payment, Jeff.
Okay, great. Thanks for your answers.
Next question is from Chris Lallard with GMP Securities.
Well, hi guys. Good quarter. I was just wondering if you could talk a bit about, just give a little color around your most recent investments and, you know, where you see the portfolio moving in terms of if you have any target sectors or areas that you want to kind of move towards.
Yeah, Chris, good questions. So the most recent additions to the portfolio, BG Furniture, Abacus Solutions, Medical Imaging, which was announced today, Lattice Biologics, DS Handling. You know, I think there's a bit of a mix in there, Chris. And again, what we're continually striving to do is uncorrelated investments within the portfolio. What was interesting, a couple of weeks ago when the market melted down, we had a number of inbound calls with regard to correlation to the energy marketplace. And on a cash-on-cash basis, it was about 5%. On a risk-adjusted basis, it was about 1.25%. Which is, you know, that's a pleasing number. Within the companies themselves, the ones that I've just run through, I think there'd be a range of what I call the steady eddies, the steady eddy, quite boring companies, like a BG Furniture. They manufacture furniture, DS Handling. These are great old guard Ontario companies with, you know, the right ownership and the kind of vision and alignment with our type of a structure. Same with Lattice Biologics, although it's a slightly different type of industry. Abaca is more software. Medical Imaging is more of a franchise type structure where they're buying the franchise and building a franchise and reducing the op cost. So each one of those, you know, if I look at, you know, BG Furniture, it's furniture in the Southern Ontario marketplace. Medical Imaging is Obamacare and also healthcare in Ontario, north and south of the border. So completely uncorrelated investments, which we really like. The more uncorrelated, the better. But I think, you know, as indicated earlier, we're looking for the defensive, the cyclics, you know, the defensive, the cyclics, and the neutrals as part of that that kind of diversified portfolio. And I think we're getting it. So if something comes in the door, you know, there was a period where we saw a number of deals that came in from the Alberta oil patch, and we just started backing away and just saying, look, if we wanted to go completely overweight Alberta growth in and around the oil sands, we could fill up our boots, but that would make us correlated to that commodity cycle. So we try to avoid that type of exposure.
All right, great. That's good color. Secondly, just with respect to the dividend, on a run rate basis, do you expect to be cash flow positive from this point?
Yeah. Again, one has to be careful of forward-looking statements, but our fixed costs are fixed. There's a very low variation around those, as you know, Chris. Our upside on a monthly basis, our growth on a monthly basis, is a function of the dollar amount that we're placing. So if you look at the moving, our current rolling average is $3.8 million in the last rolling 3 quarters, or the last rolling 3 months. And so if I look at the numbers that everyone sees today in September, we're midway through, we're through October and into November, so we're already further ahead number-wise. So if unless something, you know, Herculean happens here, you know, against us, I would think this gap and the growth will just continue to expand. And then as asked previously, if we can see the right balance between the revenue growth in the underlying companies and minimize failures within the portfolio, that's where we'll start to see a very healthy compounding effect. But again, that would be, that's quarters out there. But no, I would hope that that we can see these solid types of cash flow numbers.
Steve Ferrier, I'd add one more comment on that question, and that's the nature of revenues in a quarter by month. Just because of the growth rate, typically the last month of a quarter is our largest, just because of the ramp rate. And therefore, the rate of change is actually hard to read in the quarterly numbers. We would say that's sort of part of the reason why we have high optimism around our future continued positive free cash flow. It was a very good third month of the quarter, and we would expect to see that sort of trend continuing, again, barring adverse conditions in the marketplace or things in the other direction.
So what's interesting, I think that the reference that Steve's making to that real hockey stick at the last month, I think two-thirds to three-quarters of the performance in the month came in the last 30 days of the month, of the quarter. So we would expect to see that again. You know, as a non-bank financial company, we'd expect to see a very similar heartbeat in the fourth quarter as well.
And final point I'd make is that it really relates back to that rate of deployment of capital at $3.8 million per month. That's a very robust generation of new royalties every month, and that's really what drives that continued optimism about free cash flow in the future.
If you look at $3.8 million deployed per month on a per share basis, that should drop to the bottom line of just under, let's say, plus or minus 0.7 of a penny per month per $3.8 million based on the shares outstanding. So that's the potential dividend of each $3.8 million invested. So annualized, that's a 10-cent number. So we're really pleased with the nature of the cash flow, the free cash flow being generated from the company at this stage.
Okay, great. And just lastly, any updates or thoughts about implementing a loss reserve just to protect against underperforming investments?
It's funny because we've had this discussion a number of times. Donica, do you want to?
No. You finish, and then
I think Donica will pitch in here as well. I think we try to take quite a conservative approach to the portfolio structure. We don't have any arrears or anything in default at this point in time, and we're seeing very strong growth. If we saw those two working against one another, we'd probably head towards some type of a cash reserve. But that would be like a couple of very specific signals would have to be hit for us to go to that extent of fortifying a balance sheet. I think we're actually, you know, we're becoming quite comfortable with the balance we're seeing on growth versus the failure side of the equation.
Yeah, I mean, just to echo Bill's point as well, there's really nothing in any of the investees which would indicate that there's any impairment has arisen. And so we constantly monitor this, and we would constantly review it. And if and need be, we would be in a position to create any provisioning if there was an impairment event.
All right, thanks. That's it for me.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate the questions.
Next question is from Mark Charbin with Laurentian Bank Securities.
Good evening. Most of my questions have been answered. The only thing I'd have to follow up on is during your prepared remarks, did I hear a payout ratio going forward?
Yeah, so this was one of the things we've established with the board is some type of a broad parameter around an 80% payout ratio mark.
Right.
And that would be like for the average, like a moving average for 2015, for example. And we think there's some type of a ratio that fits well with a company like ours. But
okay.
the rough structure that we would be looking at is some type of an 80% ratio for the average or for the end of the year.
And again, the timing is still yet to be determined.
Yes, it is.
Okay,
yeah, but it's a hot topic at this point in time in a very positive way. Steve, any comments there?
Just to add a little confidence to the remark that the board has established that we will be a growth and dividend company, and that will be the nature of the business moving forward. So it's really just a question of timing and quantum. It's not a question about whether or not we will be a dividend yield-bearing organization.
Understood. Thanks for the clarification. That's all for me.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate the question.
Next question is from Jason Zandberg with PI Financial.
Greetings from the West Coast.
Hi, Jason.
Hi. A couple of questions here. You mentioned your minimums. Would it be fair to say that all your deals have minimums, or if not, what's the percentage that do have these minimums in place?
Yeah, Jason, Donica here. Over 85% of our existing portfolio have a minimum royalty component to it.
Okay. Is that's dollar weighted in terms of 85%?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. I also notice, you know, your investment bite size has been trending higher in recent months. I think there was a little bit of a dip in your rolling average in October, but nonetheless, kind of moving to a larger bite size. Do you anticipate that to continue to get larger and larger bite sizes as you grow?
I think in the SME marketplace, Jason, I think we've got like we're in a nice sweet spot here. We've seen some transactions that are quite a bit higher. And then it was funny, in September, October, we had a whole flurry of little deals of, you know, 255, 650 sort of thing. Our original response was, we don't like those little deals anymore. But then you look at it and you think, they're great yielding transactions. So that's why you saw a little bit of a dip there. So what I'd see kind of over the next 30, 60 days, maybe a combination of maybe a little larger and one or two some smaller ones. But we never know what the tide is going to bring in. And we also continually sort for quality. So if it's irrelevant as to whether it's a $4 million deal or it's a $400,000 deal. If it's a $400,000 deal that's higher quality, we'll try to drive it across the plate first.
Okay, fair enough. You mentioned earlier that about approximately half Canadian and half U.S. in terms of your geographic focus. Is that by design, or what should we expect moving forward in terms of U.S. versus Canada?
Yeah, I think it is by design. Like, I think we're and I'm really, we've got a great team, particularly me working with Steve, and he's got a great U.S. trap line. I think part of the magic of Grenville is the ability for us to actually build up a bona fide, a balanced North American portfolio. And I would just see that, the deal flow out of the U.S. is solid. And we may, the next partner that we bring on board actually may have more of a U.S. feel to it. But I think that weighting is a healthy weighting for us.
Okay, perfect. Okay. Last question, just in terms of a tax rate that I should use moving forward. Any thoughts? Do you have any sort of tax efficiencies or shelters, or what should we expect in terms of tax rate for 2015?
In relation to the tax rate, we're working on a basis of an effective tax rate of 26.5%, and we would continue to expect that would be the effective rate in 2015 onwards.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
Great. Thanks for the questions. Enjoy the West Coast.
Again, to ask a question, press star 1. The next question is from James Reed with Haywood Securities.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. Most of my questions have been answered as well, but just a couple housekeeping things. For the medical imaging investment, were the pro forma revenues for the acquired centers factored into the royalty, or is this upside for you guys?
Upside.
It's all upside there, okay. And then just in terms of the competitive environment out there, if you could just speak to that and give us a little bit of color on if you're going up against a lot of other shops, when you go and try to win these investments or not.
No, I think I think people are becoming familiar with us more, James, in the marketplace. So, I don't really see it as competition. If anything, I think there's pools of capital that are now kind of willing, they're more familiar with us, so I think they're willing to work with us. And just a point of clarification on the med investment, there's a minimum structure in place. So we won't get the full benefit of the upside. Again, there was some horse trading on the minimum, and there's a really interesting wrinkle in it for us. But the acquisitions were very important as part of the kind of decision-making side of the equation. Steve, go ahead.
I just had one more comment on competition for deals. I would say maybe one out of every five or six deals, we end up in a competitive situation, and we typically win probably 50% of those. Depends upon whether the type of source of capital. By far the more common occurrence is that we end up being a positive mix with other groups. We think typically a royalty match to a convertible note or to another form of equity or to a term loan is often the best cost of capital for the portfolio company. So it's a combination of those two.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, guys.
Next question is from Chris Lawler with GMP Securities.
Oh, hi, guys. Just to follow up, you mentioned in your press release the seasonally adjusted revenue for portfolio companies. I was just wondering if you could talk about how much seasonality there is in your portfolio at this point.
I don't know that we measure it on a percentage basis, Chris, but by and large, SME companies, a lot of them, deal with, governments and things like that would contract and budget towards the end of the year. So there's that kind of upward spike that you see in revenues. And we're seeing it. There was one company today that we've been tracking, and its revenues came in materially above what we've been expecting from them, seeing that seasonality number come through and then some. So we don't know, you know, give us a couple of years of a heartbeat through the latter part of the year and we can tell you what that looks like. But we generally think the trend should be quite positive. Dominic, anything, any comments on that side? Yeah, and then energy, in terms of energy companies themselves, like you'll see, yeah, there's a seasonal nature, whether it's to an energy company or to a construction company or to, you know, some of the contracting groups. I like to look at a company like Fortel, where a very significant percentage of their buying is by good quality rated counterparties like governments and you know, cities of Washington sort of thing. So those budgets are towards the latter part of the year.
Yeah, I mean, just to echo as well what Bill said, I mean, what we're seeing is approximately 24 to 25% growth in revenues in companies. But again, the one thing I would say is we should also take into account that over 85% of our portfolio has a minimum royalty. So in the context, that it's very much on the upside potential.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Great. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate the question.
There are no further questions at this time. I will turn the call back over to the presenters.
Yeah, so thank you very much, everyone, for the time today. We will, I think that's the end of the call, and we look forward to reporting the same or better results in the next quarter. But thank you, everyone, for your time.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.